Welcome to episode 48. Today I'm very happy. I'm joined by Patrick Hasty. Patrick, how are you today?
Good. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Really? Not enough people ask me that.
Well, it's, you know, I'm a polite guy.
Yeah. I'm actually very excited. We've been talking about possibly together for a while.
A long time.
And yeah, I'm super excited. I've been told you brought a little bit of information to share with all of us.
I do. I wouldn't come unprepared. Bear fact, this is it. Saying, have you seen the movie Legends of the Fall? Brad Pitt?
Yeah.
The scene with a bear, spoiler.
Okay.
that bear was a famous acting bear.
Okay.
Also in the movie The Great Outdoors, starring John Candy. So that bear, you got comedies, you got action dramas, period pieces. Like,
man.
I mean, that's pretty good. I think the bear's name was Bruce, but don't hold me to that.
Bruce has a lot of credit.
Yeah. Good. He's doing really good. And I think, I think he's still alive, too.
Really?
He was still alive at least maybe 5 years ago when I remember this.
Okay.
When I looked it up for this podcast five years ago.
I'm going to have to look that up later.
He's a great bear. Yeah. Have you seen The Great Outdoors?
I think.
Oh, it's such a good movie.
Yeah. Definitely.
John Candy. Yep. And,
they
shoot that fucker and it comes off his ass. It's really good.
Yeah.
I'm not into killing animals. The bear lit, spoiler. But they do shoot off a bunch of its hair.
Yeah. So. Yeah. It's a comedy. It happens. That's great.
Legends of the Fall, you can skip it.
It's been a long time since I've seen the movie. I have no desire to go back.
Legends of the Fall has, I think, the only purpose of it is so that your older sister can learn how to masturbate. I feel like that's the only reason that movie exists.
I can totally see that. Unfortunately, the only thing I've been thinking about all day because of the whole election thing is
bears. What happened?
Sorry. I know you're not quite there in the election cycle yet.
I'm behind.
Yeah. I won't spoil anything.
Sure.
But big in the end.
Oh,
real big.
Gets in there, I mean, she's going to start carrying on the same policies we enjoyed from the past administration and also start fixing stuff that she was against, you know?
Oh, man, you really need to catch up. We have so much to talk about.
My phone has been dead for a while. I lost my charger. It's a whole thing.
No Twitter, no Facebook.
I am horrified.
It's the worst. But because of all that, all the environmental stuff now, with all the polar bears, and I just see more and more sad polar bears on icebergs floating away.
It's real
sad.
That's a real goddamn
shame. So please take care of the environment. That's all I have. That's all I got. It's a sad note after fun, great note. But now that I've brought everything down, let's get into the rest of the episode. All right, guys, bye. I really didn't want the podcast to necessarily be a political podcast, but if the last 2 months, there's just no way around it. It's just here all the time in your face.
It's been terrifying.
Yeah.
It's been horrific.
Oh, it really has.
And I don't know, and I don't know shit about shit. I really don't, but I am a good person and I'm a good human.
Mm-hmm.
And just dealing with the fact that the misinformation out there has been the real problem for me.
Yes.
Having to talk to people who I know and respect, who are just so lost and confused, and I'm not saying the people who are on the right side or on their side, the opposite side, and having to listen to them and be like, oh, it's like, I don't know how to explain it. It's like, you know, that the fallacy of the beard. Do you know what that is? It's like if you see somebody, like if you see me today and I'm clean shaven, and then you see me in 2 months and I've got a beard, you're like, whoa, what the fuck? You got a beard. But if you see me today and then you see me every other day for the next 2 months, you don't really notice that I grew a beard.
Sure.
And that's the thing is there's all these people who I saw them and then I saw them again like later on, like a couple months later. And I was like, holy shit, your political ideology has totally changed. And I don't know what the hell happened over that time.
It's insane.
It's scary.
Really insane. And I hate polls. I always have. They're very inaccurate.
Well, unless you got to catch a fish. And we're back. All right, it's 14 past the hour.
We're having fun here today.
I really got you on that one.
You did.
You know, I went down to the lake and took a fishing pole.
Yeah.
Turns out 100% of the people at the lake love fishing. Okay. If I wouldn't have fucked that up, that tweet from 2011 would have really got you.
Oh my god, that's really good. Oh god. I'll get into that a little bit later. But so this poll I read, it's still my favorite poll I've ever read. It was recently, about a week and a half ago, I read it, and 50% of Trump supporters still believes Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton, but mostly Hillary Clinton, is involved in a pedophilic sex ring. Yeah. That is insane.
Yeah, it's almost like a thing. It's a my problem is that I don't know what the solution is. And I've never felt this uneasy where let's say you got a crazy cousin that's all about all this shit, you know? Imagine looking at what their Facebook page looks like, right? Like, you know what your Facebook page looks like, and you see the terror from your friends and the people you know. And we can say bubbles all we want, but that's fucking stupid. Like, I don't know. It's dumb to be like, well, I live in a bubble and it was my fault. Well, like, no, you believe people and you surround yourself with people that believe the same ideologies and things you do. But imagine looking at like that, your crazy cousin or that crazy dude you went to high school with. Imagine looking at their Facebook and all the crazy misinformation, Breitbart sites and all that kind of stuff that's showing up on their page.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, of course they're angry about all this stuff. Like, people believe that. People believe that the Clintons are part of that. Now, if you, like, if tomorrow you saw a fact that you, from a site that you believed or from a source you believed that happened, you would believe that and you would be, like, blown away. It's just a matter of them not having the process. Like, how many times have you had conversations, or I don't know if you've had conversations, but with people on that side and they cite something that is obviously false, and when you try to disprove it, they're like, well, whatever.
Yeah.
They immediately roll it away. It's like, you can say this talking point, yep, and then it's gone.
No, that, and that's my such grandfather, a weird thing. Yeah. My grandfather does that all the time.
Yeah.
My favorite is still when someone's like, well, he's big on, he's a Republican. Mm-hmm. And years ago, we got into a fight about global warming, and I'm an environmental major. I've mm-hmm. always been very militant about my environmentalism. And I was like, all right, I'm not going to argue about the political effects, but what I'm going to show you is how CO2 affects the atmosphere, and then you can make your own opinion. And I showed him all these facts. I have all these books laid out. I'm showing him, like, comparing, like, this is how much CO2 is in the atmosphere. This is how the temperature is going up, and showing him how they look exact same. And he just looked at me and went, well, what are books going to tell you?
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, you have been watching Fox News all the time, and it's just like, oh, you're just gone.
Yeah.
It's such a bummer. It's such a bummer.
There's a thing I'm very close to my family,
mm-hmm.
But my dad is, I love my dad, he's a great dude, but he is really quick to, sometimes he'll take stuff and just take it at their word.
Sure.
And so, like, I was having a conversation, this is, like, a great example, I think, of how misinformation works, and how people think, especially people who are busy and doing a lot of other stuff, and don't have, we, as comics and artists and stuff like that, I don't work every day, so I can sit around a lot and read a lot of websites and read a lot of Huffington Post and read a lot of MSNBC and read a lot of Washington Post and watch a lot of TV that I enjoy, or watch a lot of smart people, and I can be informed. Now, if you only watch a couple hours a night, or if you only read a couple things and you don't have time to really fact check shit like that, it's easy how you can misunderstand stuff. My dad and I were having a conversation one time, and just off the cuff, he goes, hey, did you hear they're getting rid of Dr. Pepper? And I was like, oh, no, I don't know what you're talking about. And he's like, yeah, Coke bought it. And since Coke owns Mr. Pibb and sells Mr. Pibb, they're going to discontinue making Dr. Pepper. And I was like, that doesn't make any sense at all. I was like, if Coke was to buy Dr. Pepper, they would just keep making Dr. Pepper because they would make all that money. It would be dumb. You know what I mean? Like, if you have something and I'm in competition with you and then I just buy your thing, I could just keep selling your thing. It's that thing from Tommy Boy. It's like, I could just slap my sticker on it and, you know.
Yep.
And I was like, that doesn't make any sense. So I Googled it. And like one quick Google search said that was a Snopes fake thing from like, that was just like an internet rumor forever that it's owned by like, what do you call it? Dr. Pepper's owned by the same company, the parent company of Snapple. It has never been to Coke. It has nothing to do with it. And I told him that. And I was just like, yeah, that didn't make any sense. And that he was just like, oh, huh. I was like, yeah, but how many times did you repeat that to different people?
Yeah.
Because you thought it was an interesting thing and you didn't think to, and now that it's defunct, well, who fucking cares? It's moving on.
It's insane.
He's going to remember the original fact more than he remembers me proving it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And that's unfortunately how all this stuff starts with people.
Yeah. And I don't know if you've read all the stories or not. There's a few stories. I won't get too into it because, again, like, I don't like talking about anything unless it's like facts in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
But right now there's like a lot of teenagers in Macedonia who are making a lot of money making fake news stories. And they say the ones that sell the most are crazy fake news for Trump. So a lot of these fake news articles are coming from Macedonia because these kids are making a ton of money.
Yeah, and they're getting all the clicks on the ads. Exactly. And shit. Yeah.
And they all say like, well, listen, yeah, some of them think it is wrong, it is immoral. Other people just kind of say it's for entertainment. It's kind of up to the reader, which is true. I think everyone has to be, you need to be educated. You need to read one from one side, one from another side, and then also read just the facts and come up with your own opinion. But it's, I just read that and I was like, this is where we're in a situation where I have thinking that our government will tell us the truth is a fantasy. And like, I know always, people are always like, oh, that's the government for you. Yeah. That's unacceptable.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the point where, and I kind of figured it would, not to this extent, get to the point and be like, oh, something has to change because it, you have people saying things that are not real on both sides. But right now we have a major movement of just, they literally have rebranded it as alternate facts.
This is the conversation, you know, our friends have been having and people we know have been having a lot, like, for the last 2 months. It's this whole horrific situation. Now it's starting to come to a head. And I think that pride and I think the most, my problem so much is, I mean, everything that's happening is horrific, but I don't think anything, I don't know what's going to stop it. And I'm very fearful of that. And it's almost in a Zen way where I'm like, fuck it, we're going to die. We're going to all get killed. And and that's terrible, but whatever. Not whatever. I don't honestly mean that way, but like, it's very to the point where I can't panic about it all the time, where I feel like I'll fucking go crazy.
It's like so overwhelming that you're just kind of like, okay, that's an inevitable fact. So between then and there, that's what I'll concentrate on.
The thing that scares me that I really don't like is about a lot of people. There are a lot of people, and you can go anywhere on the internet. There's a lot of people who are conservative, or they're Republicans, and they voted for Trump because they're like, yes, we believe in some of the things. We really think he's going to bring back the infrastructure, and he's going to bring back our factory jobs, which is crazy, but they bought into that. He spoke to them. He went to them and told them that stuff. And for whatever reason, Hillary wasn't touching a stone, probably because of 20 years of bad press. But they bought into that, and now they're regretting it, and they're seeing this shit. And there's a lot of smart, intelligent conservatives with good hearts that are like, just going crazy over stuff like the Muslim ban and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
But I also think there's a huge part of being an American and a huge part of living in America today is pride and considering yourself intelligent. And I think there's a lot of people, if you see it all over on the internet, who are like, who are going to defend him, who are going to defend him to the death because they made a choice. And by coming back on that choice, that's saying that they're wrong. And by saying that they're wrong, they're saying they're stupid. And people would rather die than be stupid.
Without a doubt.
And so, and that's the thing that that makes me scared, because that's where I think a lot of trouble is going to come.
Yeah.
I think a lot of, like I tweeted something about this, about how like I've had more in my life. I've had, the only time I've ever received death threats for anything, it was from white, Midwestern white dudes. You know what I mean? It wasn't from anybody from another country, it was from those people. Those are the people that are going to get angry and snap.
Yeah. I mean, statistically speaking, it usually is.
Yeah.
The amount of things that have happened that were not white people is minuscule.
Yeah.
And on top of that, with the whole Muslim ban, none of the countries banned ever had anyone
it's all ridiculous.
It's insane.
And it's the thing as I said, I'm dumb as hell, so I'm dumb, but I know I'm dumb, and I know what I know, and I know where my heart is. So I know how I feel on this, but I also can't 100% speak intelligently on it, which is fine because I follow and I support a lot of people who can.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what I'm afraid of, is the way that our country is going to keep splintering off of this. And it all started, I believe, 100%, it all started with Reagan, with pushing aside, making the blue and the red so much, dividing so much, that it all started there, and it's just been happening bigger and bigger and bigger. And we got this wonderful 8 years under, not wonderful 100%, but a wonderful in a social civil rights aspect with Obama, and that swing came back way harder than anybody wanted it to. And the thing that I would respect a lot more is if people would just be like, yeah, I'm a fucking racist. Like,
yeah, admit to it.
Yeah, I would like that so much more. The pussyfooting behind, like, I'm alt-right, I am a white nationalist, all that kind of stuff. No, just say you're racist.
Yeah, just say you're a neo-Nazi.
If you, I think maybe it was Patton Oswalt who said this once, but he's like, if you say that you don't want, it was something, I think it was with gay marriages, like if you think you don't want gays to get married because you hate gays and you think it's gross, that's a legitimate excuse. But if you say it's because it defies the sanctity of marriage or it's against your Bible, that's all bullshit. And
bullshit.
That's all like semantics.
Yep.
But if you just say it grosses me out, that's fine.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's not fine, but that's at least an actual opinion.
You're
and,
telling the truth.
Yeah, and
we,
what your
we
heart
can
is.
Go from there.
Yeah. It's very weird.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, but it's real. It's real weird. But anyway. We did politics.
Hell
that's
yeah!
Good.
Let's get on to anything else.
Yeah. Oh man! So how about that grass? It's really growing.
Oh, fuck yeah, dude.
Real great. All right. I'll ask the same question I love asking people. Patrick Hasty.
Yeah.
Who are you?
Well, who are you?
We're having fun here, guys.
Yeah, this is a great
we're having
comedy
fun.
Podcast. 25 past the hour. I don't know. I think I'm a Iowan, I believe first. I'm a comedian. I'm a humanist. Mm-hmm. I'm a husband. I'm a uncle. I feel like that in those order. I'm a son.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Five times over.
Five times an uncle?
No, six.
Six times six an times. Uncle.
Yeah, I got five nephews and a niece. They're all great.
That's awesome.
I'm a son and a brother and stuff like that. I feel like that's what I am. I think I'm Iowan humanist, husband, comedian, son, uncle.
Nice.
That's
I
where
like
I
that.
Think brother.
Could you talk about or touch upon like the humanist aspect of it?
Sure. When I was in college, so I didn't read when I was in high school and stuff like that. I was one of those people that's like books are dumb. And
you and me both.
Yeah. And so anytime somebody had to read books in school, I graduated high school in 2003. Mm-hmm. So the internet was around. We had it in our schools and stuff like that. And I found out really early that pretty much any book report you need to do, you can find on the internet.
Spark Notes.
And, yeah, yeah. And I wouldn't copy and paste. I would read the Spark Notes website or I would read somebody else's book report and then I would write my own on it. So it was never, what do you call it? Stealing. It was never plagiarism. Mm-hmm. I was writing my own thing, but I was never reading the books.
Yeah.
And I did that enough to graduate high school.
Yep.
And then I went to college and I believe it was my junior year of college, I got a job working overnights at a gas station. And when I did that, I worked on this gas station in Ames, Iowa, and I worked off the highway and no one ever came in at night. Like from like maybe 1 a.m. until 6 a.m. I would be dead. The store would be empty. And so I could do all of my work I needed to get done in an hour, and then I had nothing to do. So I went to the local library, and I was like, well, fuck, I'm going to read all these books. And so I read literally all the books that I was supposed to read in high school, like John Steinbeck and like Jane Eyre and stuff like that. Like, I read everything. And I read Slaughterhouse-Five, and I was like, that fucking, I like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I was, so, and I pulled to Kurt Vonnegut. And I just started reading all of his books. And immediately I was like, oh, this is the guy saying the shit that I believe in. And it was one of those guys I didn't know, you know? I knew in college that I was liberal and I know I believed in like civil rights and people's rights and stuff. But the idea of being good for the sake of being good and being good because it's a good thing to do, fucking love that. I was never religious, really. I dabbled with it a lot. I grew up in a Christian household, but we never went to church. I was never baptized.
Mm-hmm.
I was in a Christian band for a while, but literally it was like we were a band and the place that allowed the Christian bands let us play there all the time. So we were like, fuck it, we're a Christian band, you know?
Okay.
And the other dudes in the band were Christian. And, you know, and at the time I considered myself one too.
Sure.
I still to this day consider, I would say I'm an agnostic over an atheist just because I don't know shit. But
yeah. Oh, yeah. I agree. Atheism can take the form too extreme. You're really just doing the same thing.
Yeah.
I'm totally an agnostic or well, at least like even I like I'm into all the stuff.
Yeah.
I just love listening and learning and finding out because I think it's crazy. I can't tell you what's going on out there.
Sure.
It's insane.
And if I'm ever to list my religion for anything, which is doesn't come up often in my life.
Sure.
But I would put down that I would be a humanist just because that's really what I feel. And Kurt Vonnegut was a huge proponent of that, as was Isaac Asimov, who I haven't read as much of his shit, but I saw the iRobot movie with Will Smith and I cannot recommend it. But I and that just kind of that living your life, being good because It's a good thing to do, treating people with respect, because that's kind, not because you're going to get to go to heaven, or not because you think you'll get good karma out of it, which it can, I mean, that doesn't help or doesn't hurt, but just doing it because it's a good way to be.
Sure.
I was like, well, that's a fucking easy way to live my life, you know?
Yeah. That's such and, a, that's the way I didn't know that that it was actually fell under humanism. I think and that's
humanism,
where I'm at.
Humanism may have more aspects to it than sure. that. That's what I always took from it, and that's what I like.
And that's, I honestly yeah. think that's what it is to you, what it is to you.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what anyone else says or thinks, it's whatever it means to you. That's, yeah. that's amazing. I love that. And you are genuinely such a kind person.
I try to be.
You really yeah. are. I love when I first started doing comedy regularly, I would see you, I mean, I still do. And I love it because you are so positive.
Yeah.
Even when you're making fun of someone on stage.
Yeah.
You do in such a fun, positive way that it's like afterwards, it's like you almost have to be like, thank you.
Yeah, yeah,
that
yeah.
was so and I love, love, love that.
Thank
it's
you.
So
thank
great.
You. That I'm glad that people notice that stuff. But and what sucks is a lot of that comes from anger and not mm-hmm. I wouldn't consider myself angry, but I get frustrated a lot. And especially with stand up, because I have this thing where I don't know about you, but I was never good at anything ever. And I was never successful at shit. Like, I failed out of a bunch of colleges. I could never catch on. I loved history and I loved studying history. But for whatever reason, I kept getting pushed into other majors in college. I did 3 colleges in 4 years, fucked them all off.
Me too.
I worked at Blockbuster Videos forever, and then they fucking took that away from me, Netflix. I worked at gas stations for a long time.
Uh-huh.
And stand-up was the first thing, and I've talked about this, I've said that a billion times, but
sure.
when I, my wife and I were married before, we got married right before I started stand-up,
uh-huh.
and my wife knew from, like, middle school that she wanted to be a landscape architect.
Yeah, yeah,
my
yeah.
best friend Joey knew when we were little kids that he wanted to be a chef. He's a chef in Vegas now, and he's like, that's his career and his passion in his life, and I did not have that until I started doing stand-up when I was 25. And so, as soon as I started doing stand-up, I was like, holy fuck, this is it.
Mm-hmm.
But then what that did is that made me take it so seriously and so precious about it that I get angry a lot at people doing it the wrong in what I consider the wrong way
mm-hmm.
and doing things that I think are gross or think are wrong. And it took me a long time, like my first couple years. And it was after I was in New York for probably a year and a half before I realized that like, I can't judge other people and their stand up and what they're doing by my standards, because that's yeah. unfair to them because mm-hmm. they're not using my standards.
Yeah.
And once I kind of started coming to that thing, that's when I started, I think, being more like having more fun on stage and being more zen, because I could stop caring. And I do still care. And there are people that, I mean, I feel like a lot of comics are this way. I'm driven by spite. Everything, I want to keep getting things, and I want to keep being able to progress and build as a comedian and get better, just so that I can, so there's like 4 dudes that I fucking hate that I can be like, fuck you, even though I would never say it to them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I agree.
I think the building the positive of it and building the positivity and staying away from negative. Like, if that's the what I was just saying, if that's how I always was, I wouldn't deserve friends.
Sure.
And so that's like when you get, I feel like that's a huge thing in comedy. Like, yes, you got to be what's the right word? Not anarchist, but you have to be the person fighting back and pushing back and stuff like that.
Sure.
And you got to be a little bit of a nihilist and you got to be a little bit of a jaded and stuff. But man, you can also just be a fun, nice person. I have way yep. more fun when I hang out with comics who seem to be happy and having fun than the people that are like, fuck this, fuck that. And
oh, I agree. Yeah. I don't have, I get, I spent, I was a similar situation. I got in comedy though at improv at 27, mm-hmm. stand up really at 30.
Sure.
And I take it very seriously. And I'm also like trying to make up, because that's late. That's
makeup, that word you just used, I identify with that so goddamn yeah. much. That's how I am. I feel like I stopped going to college in 2007. Mm-hmm. I started doing stand-up in 2007. I started doing stand-up in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And so 7 to 8, 8 to 9, 9 to 10, 10 to 11. That's 4 years where I did not do anything creative. I fucking ran a gas station,
mm-hmm.
lived in a small town, worked in a small town. And so like as soon as stand-up started to catch on, when I started, once like a couple months in, I was like, oh, I can get good at this thing maybe. I'm good at this. Or I'm gonna be good at this. I feel like I've been making that time up the whole time. And now I'm past that. You know, I've made up for that 4 years. I kind of always wonder if when I'm 8 years in, will I feel better? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But I really don't think so. I'm 6 years in and I still feel like I'm fucking chasing it too. But
Yeah, I think we'll forever have to. I feel like that the chase is definitely something. It's funny because so since I started late, I started the whole podcast thing. I'm up to like 10 podcasts now. Over the weekend, all of a sudden I just doubled. And I was like, I don't even know what happened. It was like a bus just flew by. And it's great and I love it. And it actually, after busting my ass insanely the last like 6, 7 months, it's now that it's starting to pay off. I'm going on the road for the first
Fuck
time,
yeah.
doing a few shows with a few friends, which I'm super excited because originally they were going to do a couple shows and they've been doing it for like, it's Brandon Scott Wolf and
Oh,
Andrew
yeah.
O'Connell.
Fucking very funny.
And they were just going to go do a couple shows.
What's their Always Been Silly? Isn't that their podcast? Yeah, they're great.
And I produced their
Oh,
podcast.
sure. Yeah, they're great
So
dudes.
I was like, oh, I'll tell you what, I have all these days I have to use before the end of the year, and
Sure.
I only have a couple more months. So I'll go with you. We'll do a couple podcasts, and then they were like, "Well, do you want to do a couple shows with us? Let's do a couple shows, let's book shows."
Yeah.
And now it's like a whole thing with all of us. And I was just like, "Oh, this is cool." Without the podcast, I wouldn't be doing that. And it's
Yeah.
like, "Oh, this is great." And things are
And
trying to pay off. Feels so
that
good.
shit, the if even if it wasn't paying off, I don't know if you mean financially, but even
Oh
if it
no, not at
wasn't,
all
yeah.
financially.
But the what it does for you as a comic and for as a podcaster and all that stuff is so important. Have you had Jake Fromm on the show?
Yes.
Okay. Jake is I love him. He's great. And if he listens, I'm kidding. I hate you. But Jake is a very funny comic. And he's a year or two in or something like that. And he's a dude that I've always been like ever since I first saw him. I was like, that guy's really funny. He keeps working his ass off. He's gonna keep being funnier. Well, he went on the road with Hannah and Nick Pupo, Hannah Boone and Nick Pupo. And so you see him here. It's like the fallacy of the beard. I saw him here. They went on the road for like 3 weeks. I see him in Orlando when we're down there doing shows. And I see Jake, and fucking Jake is crushing. And that's what happens is those 3 weeks on the road that he got to do real shows in front of real comics. Not the New York shows aren't real, but it's a different environment. He got to
Very
go do that kind
different.
of stuff, and he got to do a little longer sets, and he got to find out, oh, maybe, I don't know, this is my interpretation, but sometimes you're like, oh, that bit that I thought was going to crush because it crushes at a mic in Manhattan or it crushes at a mic at, in Brooklyn, it doesn't do shit on the road. But then this other thing I can chase and follow because these people love it, and it was just you can see that immediately. I got down there and I was like, I fucking see you are better now than you were a month ago when I saw you.
I'm very excited to
And
because I have a lot of
that is
stuff.
exactly what's gonna happen to you.
So I know there's a lot of stuff that people are like, oh, that's a funny premise, but it's like at open mics, it doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
And I agree. Maybe it's not, some of the stuff's not different enough. And then I have other openers that are just really silly. Where in the city, people are like, well, that's really fucking weird.
Yeah.
But I have a feeling of on the road, people are gonna be like, yeah, that's this. That's our area. Like we're like that's where we are. I'm like, fuck.
One rad thing that'll happen right away for you, because I started in the Midwest, and so we used to go do like, I don't know, they weren't really one-nighters, but they were kind of like one-nighters. We go to small towns in Iowa, small towns in Missouri and shit, do a show. And something that'll happen right away is you will, I don't know if you do this already, but the road and regular people and all that kind of shit, I'm using quotations, that stops being a thing. Because you can get a better idea of what'll work in different places. But like until you go and actually start doing that stuff, you don't really know what it is. Because like you can go to like you like if you go to what's a good thing? Like Iowa City, Iowa, you can fucking crush harder than you can crush at any alt room in New York. Whereas if you go to Tulsa, Oklahoma, shit's a little different. You go to San Antonio, shit's different. Like you go to these different cities
Oh,
and
I'm
you
so
see what's
excited.
different about them.
So
But you
excited.
also it's no longer as scary. It's no longer like, oh, the road or oh, these town, small towns or something. It's like, oh, that's just another thing I have,
Yeah.
And I'm excited about that for you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I like it because I actually like performing for people I don't know.
Sure. Oh yeah. It's so much easier.
Because when I first started, I was very quiet, very shy. And even after 6 months, I still kept to myself. And I started doing the podcast. That's when I started getting to know people. And people are like, oh yeah, we're like introducing ourselves. And like I would tell them like I've been around for a while, but I never talked to anyone. Now when I do stand up in front of you guys, I'm terrified.
Sure. Well,
I want to impress you guys so
I think that's a
bad.
good thing though, because an argument I've never liked. I love New York City. I absolutely love. I am so glad I moved here. I mean, there's certain little things I might have wanted to do different, or but I love it here. And one of the biggest knocks I hate when you go to other places or I hear comics here talk about it is the mics are just comics. The mics are just comics. Yeah, they are. But that's fine, because if I make a fucking room full of comics laugh, then that's probably gonna be something,
Yeah, very much so.
I did an open mic. I was at the Orlando Indie Fest, and they had a every day they had a mic you could go to, and I did it one night, and they were all. This is not. I'm not criticizing these comics. It was a lot of the local comics who maybe were on the festival or didn't get on the festival who were at this mic. They were all really funny people, like newer comics and stuff. But they were all treating this like a mic here. Like they were treating it like they're at the creek in the basement. They were looking at their phones, they're going through their notes, and I don't have any problems with that. But the thing is in Orlando, the open mic had 30 fucking people at it. Had regular people who were at this restaurant and coffee shop to eat, and were just like, oh, a comedy thing. Yeah, let's fucking turn our chairs and watch.
That's awesome.
And they're so lucky, but they don't know it. But as soon as they come to New York or as soon as they go to like LA, then they'll fucking see it and, yep. and respect what they had.
Yeah.
But that's just the thing that, so as soon as I went up, I still worked on new stuff, but I acknowledged it. I was like, hey, this is a, you guys are amazing. Thank you so much for being here. And then I think you could kind of see other people after me do that too, because it's like, oh, we're lucky that we get this. We're lucky that we get to do our new stuff in front of people. You get to honor that, you know? And it's, I don't know. That's, I think that's fucking rad. And yeah. that's why I think it is rad, but also doing it here in front of comics, you get way tighter. Everybody that moves here,
very much so.
6 months in, you're so much tighter.
I remember when I first started, somebody was like, hey, do you want to do a show? And I was like, yeah, sure. Like 30 minutes. I was like, you don't know how to run a show.
Yeah.
But I was like, yes, but you should probably work on that.
Yeah.
And I ended up doing about 25 minutes and it was fine. I actually did really well compared to some of the other acts that were going on. I was like, oh, that's great. That was such like a thing. But then I started using those bits and they weren't working because after a while, I started like really chiseling them down.
Yeah.
And what was once 25 minutes is like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But they are five good minutes.
Sure.
And
that's, I think
it's true.
That's what I like about comedy. I'm not going to say that's how it should be done,
mm-hmm.
but that's how I like to do comedy.
Sure.
Because I tell stories on stage. Mm-hmm. I had a comic tell me on the road once, his problem with New York. And I was like, okay, this is going to be great. And he's like, what I don't like about New York is you can't be a storytelling comic there. You can't. There's only 3-minute mics. You can't tell a story in 3 minutes. And I was like, well, I'm a storytelling comic. And he's like, yeah, but you started in Iowa. And I was like, I've been in New York for 4 years. I was like, yeah. I learned how to do stand-up in New York. I figured out a way to tell stories. I figured out a way to get my stories out 3 minutes at a time. And it was just them making a block in their head and what they think New York is, whatever.
Yeah.
Probably because somebody in their mm-hmm. scene went to New York once and then told them that. But I think once you can do that, like when I was in Iowa and I was telling stories, everybody's very forgiving. When you, not forgiving, but like, polite almost. We're like, so a bit that I would write, if I was going to tell a story, like just like now, if I was a bit that I would want to do today, if I was to tell it in Iowa, that bit would come out 6 minutes
mm-hmm.
because there's air, it doesn't have to be as tight because it doesn't need to be.
Yep.
And people would laugh at it and people would love it.
Yeah.
But once I moved here and learned how to hone that and get better at that, now that bit's going to be 2.5 minutes, 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And I can put it with another bit that would have been 6 minutes that I got down to 3 minutes. And then I've got six fucking tight, good story minutes as opposed to six kind of meandering thoughts, you know?
Yeah, I agree. And I too do stories. And at first it was hard, but then I was like, I looked at it that way. But then when I started thinking, I was like, no, this is great. I was taking out words that I have a tendency to just talk and be like, oh, all you're trying to say is no.
Sure.
And so I was like, oh, okay, cool.
That's a huge thing. I was talking to a friend of mine who's a very funny comic. I won't say their name just in case this is weird for them. I doubt it would be, but I'm in my head. But
names, just kidding.
No, it's nothing big, but I was talking to a comic friend and they had his joke that's great, such a funny story, so good. And the front was a little clunky. Like the startup was just a little clunky.
Sure.
And they were talking about it. They're like, yeah, I can't figure out what's there. And I was like, what if you just said this, and this? Like literally take 20 seconds of setup and just say, this is the thing. And then you're right into your first laugh.
Yep.
And it's one of those things, like, I watch them, like, click. And I have a bit that I've been doing for a long time that I can't see that in. I have the same problem that they have, but I can't see the fix yet. And so it's frustrating to me. I'm like, I know that there's a better way to do this, but I can't see it yet, so I keep fucking it up. And it's weird, but that's a thing that we can, once you get there, you're like, oh, shit, you know?
Yep.
I think there's nothing that makes me more proud is when I get to drop a weak punchline, when I realize, oh, I don't need to fucking say that anymore.
Yep.
Because the other things are way bigger, you know? It makes me feel like I'm an actual artist, which I'm not.
Oh, yeah? That's not true at all.
Well, but it makes me feel more of an artist than I am. It makes me feel like I'm really doing something, and
sure.
I'm not. I'm just like, oh, you don't need to say that one part about your balls because you're just going to hit it with the dick part in a minute, you know?
That actually reminded me, your political jokes on social media are my favorite because
that's just viral. That's all that is.
Oh, yeah. Because they're funny, they're informational, and mm-hmm. it's not just like right or wrong. Like you're like for the most part giving these facts, and like I love them. They're my favorite political posts.
Thank you. That
online.
Means a lot.
Yeah.
That is literally just I made a long time ago. I made a I don't know. Fucking, you listen to when you I started doing comedy in the podcast age, and so you listen to Marin and you listen to fucking people talk about they're finding their voice and figuring out who they are and writing for their character. And I never saw that. I never understood that.
Mm-hmm.
And so at one point, I just like it was probably like 2014. I was like, I was living here. I'd been here for about a year or whatever, and I'm just like, I'm just gonna start doing whatever, saying whatever I want to say. And on stage, it's not the same. It's not 100% the same. But like, I used to, if I wrote like a fucking weird, dirty cum joke on Twitter, I would delete it from my Facebook because I was like, I don't need my mom to see that.
Yeah.
Like, my mom's going to think it's funny. She understands me, you know?
Yeah.
And so what, and it's like, once you start pulling back these filters, I'm not an insane person, but so like, if I'm sitting there and I understand this is not the way other people should work, but if I'm sitting there and I get really overwhelmed by something, I'm just going to fucking write about it.
Sure.
I write a tweet about it. And that's kind of how I deal with stuff. It's just like in stand-up. That's how I deal with stand-up. And because of that, it makes me see things. If I can find a, okay, so like, I, for instance, if you're talking about this kind of stuff, a huge frustration of mine is I know people who supported Bernie Sanders during the primaries.
Yep.
And then ended up voting for Donald Trump. I Ooh. Know human beings who did that. People I know and people I've known for a long time.
Wow.
And I cannot wrap my brain around it. I could not wrap my brain around it. And then I finally, one day it hit me and I wrote a tweet that was, that's like if you go to a restaurant and you're like, can I have Coke? And they say, oh, is Pepsi okay? And you're like, no, that's fine. I'll just burn the restaurant down. Yep. That's, and then once I put it in my head that way and could get like a joke out of it, I was like, okay, well, now this is a thing I can think about and I can understand, you know?
Yeah. That's also a great tweet. Yeah. I love that.
Well, yeah, the joke itself is just an easy little joke.
Sure.
But once I found a way to make it that way, it's like I took control over it. Like one time, like, this is not political, but... one time I used to work in an office and this guy said, hey, do you know who you look like? And I was like, don't tell me, it's going to be weird. But he told me I looked like Bobby Hill from King of the Hill. And he thought I would think that was cool and funny. And I was like, it hurt my feelings. And I'm tough, but it hurt my feelings. I'm like, that's a fucked up thing to say to somebody. And then I made it into a bit. And I said that on stage and got such a big laugh. I immediately was like, well, now I have all the power in this fucking thing.
Yeah.
Like immediately. Yours. And it made me, and that was the day that I started learning to deal with stuff like that on stage. Like if I'm upset with somebody in my family, if my wife and I have an argument, if I can make a joke about it and make it honest and true to what I feel, but if I can get a laugh out of it, I can, even if I'm the butt of it, if it's my fault, I can then see it a little better and make the control out of it.
Yeah.
And the thing that sucks about the Bobby Hill thing is first off, I like that I don't have to do that joke anymore, but very funny comic Sean Donnelly has a very similar joke about somebody telling him he looks like Bobby Hill.
Nice.
And he did it on Conan. And it was, there's a thing when you go on stage and you tell the audience, this guy said a mean thing to me. Here's the mean thing they said. And then everybody laughs. There's a part of it where they're all like, oh yeah, that fucking dude looks a little bit like him. So once I saw Sean Donnelly do that on Conan, I was like, oh, I don't have to do that joke no more. I can retire this joke, be like, oh, somebody else is already doing a similar bit. But then also I'm like, I don't have to fucking tell audiences that somebody thought I looked like Bobby Hill anymore. So I was like,
and you still have the ownership over
exactly. It was such a good like symbiotic thing that was, and his joke's way funnier than mine too. But it was just such a big, like, I don't know, such a fun little path. And I'm always looking back. I'm always writing my own biography, not literally, but like, that's how I'm always thinking of it. And so like, that's another Vonnegut thing is like, when something good happens, take a time to stop and say, well, if this isn't nice, I don't know what is. And that's what I do. Like when I figured that out and that Bobby Hill joke happened, immediately afterwards, I was like, okay, well, this is a tool I have now, you know?
Yeah.
When my grandma died, it was very sad and it was very hard and I was there and it was terrible. But like the next 2 days later, I was on stage talking about it and it made it such a different thing to me. And I feel like in that is learning how to do things like that and learning how to figure out stuff like that. That is, I think, how voices get found. I think you can look into them other ways. You can write to a character. You can do all this other stuff that I wish I could figure out.
Sure.
But I think just being true to yourself and saying the things you want to say and finding ways to deal with your life on stage, that is what I think, that's what I'm chasing.
Yeah, that actually hits on like my existential crisis, like on a T, and I actually, like, that's, I just, like, a weird revelation from what you said, like, that was perfectly done, because I always feel like, who am I writing for? It's like, it's me, but like, what am I trying to say? What am I trying to do? And it's like, sometimes, like, the new stuff I've been writing is the fact, and I see it. I've been seeing someone who is a linguist and a writer, and I have the vocabulary of that of a sixth grader. Like,
yes.
I have a terrible vocabulary, and my grammar's terrible. Mm-hmm. I was a science guy, so I love numbers. I love science. I did that all through college. It was great. But I've always struggled with that. And when I get anxious, the thought processes don't, like, speed up. They stop. So most of my conversations become very broken. It's very hard. Ironically enough, I have a podcast.
Yeah,
don't know how that's worked.
Well, yeah, I same thing. Like, once I start, I think, and maybe it's just because I sounds like, I'm 32. It sounds like you're around my age, too.
I'm 31. Sure.
Once, there's another thing that happens when you get a little older, where you just stop worrying about stuff. There were so many times that I would be, if I didn't know how to say the right word or pronounce a word right, I just wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, well, fuck it. I say things weird. I say things silly. Like things like y'all and folks. Like, I didn't grow up in the South, but I think saying y'all is a very interesting thing to do. It's not like I'm making a choice to do this, but that comes more naturally than me being like, hey, everybody. It's just fun to be like, y'all want to come fucking do this thing? Funny, cursing at funny times. I think it's silly. I think it's funny. Yeah. That's true to me.
It's the best, yeah.
And so it's once you can just be like, I'm going to be me.
Yeah.
And that's the thing I think that starting stand-up later, and I have a bit about this too, but and I feel like I've also probably said this on a podcast too, but I started when I was 25, and one of my favorite comics and friend, oldest friends in comedy is a very funny LA comic, named Andrew Lopez. He's great. You can look him up. He's wonderful. But he started doing comedy when he was like 18, and I started when I was 25, and he started a couple years ahead of me too.
Yeah.
So, he was like 2 or 3 years in by the time I started.
Sure.
And so I could get great comedy advice from him. I could go to him and ask him stuff, and he would give me this wonderful advice, but then he would be
like this.
And it's not really this. Like, I mean, in the joke, it's pushed up, but like,
sure.
He'd be like, how do I know if I like a girl? You know what I mean? Because like, your brain develops at different levels. So like, he could tell me what festivals to submit to, but he didn't know what health insurance exactly was, you know? And that's one thing that I like that I started comedy when I did. I was married. I had failed out of a bunch of colleges. I had made mistakes. I had fucked up a lot.
Yeah.
And so when I got into it, I knew where the bottom was. Sometimes you meet comics who start when they're like 18 or 19, and like, by the time they're my age now, they're 10 years in, and they have careers. But then if sometimes when you talk to them, you're like, oh, you don't know fucking nothing.
Yeah.
Or maybe, like, no, that's not always true. Obviously, a lot of them become real around and stuff. But it's like, oh, you have such a weird view, you know? Sometimes I'll hear comics talk on podcasts, like comics I respect and really like.
Sure.
And they'll talk, money is the thing that always surprised me.
Yep.
You'll hear a comic that I respect who's like a successful comic, and they'll talk about money. And they're like, this happens a lot. They'll be like, and I wasn't, they're telling a story about their early days. And they're like, and I wasn't making nothing. You know, I was only making like $30,000, $40,000 a year at this point. And it's like, oh, that's a little bit of money to you. And that's one of those things that's like, oh, that's because you went from being a kid. You got right into comedy. You worked your ass off. You got funny, all that stuff. But you never had a chance where you were like making $15,000 a year at a shitty job.
Yeah.
And you would have killed to have $30,000, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the thing.
Funny. It's all perspective. Rambly,
but it makes sense, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no, not at all.
In my head, it does.
It's great. Yeah, everything you said, it's true. I actually don't know if I would have... I don't know if I would be here if I got into comedy earlier. Like,
yeah.
I didn't have that much of an issue with alcohol in college.
Sure.
It wasn't a healthy relationship. I would only drink once or twice a week, but it's like when I did, oh, dear God.
Yeah.
So, like, it was unhealthy. So if I did comedy and was around that more often... And, like, I hit a weird rock bottom in college, but, like, because I was in college and working, I had a very structured rock bottom.
Sure.
Like,
what
I hit
rock bottom.
Just, I was wildly depressed, very sad. Even after college, like, I got into a relationship that kind of got me up and out of it. But then as that relationship went from good to bad the last, like, 6 months to a year, like, that's when I just totally fell off. Spent a year trying to get over it, and then since then, like 4 or 5 years, and then I found comedy and better jobs. I know what I'm supposed to do. I'm working harder. Mm-hmm. I found the podcast thing, and it's like, but I had to hit that. And the thing is, if I didn't hit that with a relationship, something like that, just judging by my addictive personality, like I genuinely could have gotten myself into trouble if I didn't have that structure when I hit those lows.
Yeah.
I needed the experience outside of comedy to do it. And like, yes, it is late. It is a bit of a bummer. Sometimes I get frustrated at myself, But I needed that. There's no way around that. I needed that.
And the most important thing, I think, with comedy that's super interesting, and goddamn, that's one of the things that really frustrates me is when I see people talk about this shit, is a thing I really hate is when you see comics who are maybe 7 to 10 years in, but maybe they're not necessarily famous or successful. Maybe they're famous in a scene. And I don't see this as much with New York comics.
Sure.
But they've been doing it for a long time, and they're somewhat known, but they're not successful. Maybe they're not famous. Maybe they still have day jobs or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But the way they condescend to newer comics, especially comics that are like 2 or 3 years in, that whole like there's a whole attitude I hear on the internet a lot that's like, oh, I can't wait for this comedy boom to be over. And it's like, well, fuck you. Like, why do you get the pass because you've been doing it a little longer? Yeah. Now, I do think that you learn so much by doing it a long time. I'm very proud of the amount of time I've been doing it. But I also know comics who've been doing it has Nasser Khan been on here?
Not yet.
You should have him. He's great.
I want to get him on. Nasser's
been doing stand-up for like 2.5 years or something. Sure. And he's fucking
phenomenal. So good. Oh my God, he's so good.
And he's a dude that I'm like, he's funnier. I truly believe that he's funnier at 2.5 years in than I am today, or was, you know, have been for the last couple of years, you know, like he figured it out quick. And I think starting in New York really helps you out. But he's very funny. So it's like, well, fuck, who cares? You know? And there's way more stories of people getting it early and staying successful than there are of people who got it really late. You know what I mean? And that's scary to me because who knows what happens, but I just don't see what the point of being like, oh, you're wrong because you've been doing this a little bit of time, you know?
Yeah.
It's very weird.
A lot of people also are very concerned about the end result, which is true. Listen, I mean, the things I do have an end goal. Yeah. I would like to be able to do this for my job and be able to do nothing but comedy. And even with my schedule now, like, the process has been, like, life-affirming.
Yeah.
Like, I've met my favorite people in the world through comedy. I get to do this. I get, we get to have this conversation.
Yeah.
It's... We live such cool lives.
Yeah.
Like, it's great. I love it. And the whole, I'm such a proponent of, like, being present.
Mm-hmm.
And every time, like, every day, I'm always just like, this is so cool.
Yeah.
And some of those guys, I just want to be like, but look how cool this is. Like, why not help them?
Mm-hmm.
Or if you don't want to be a part of it, maybe just step aside.
Yeah.
But it's like,
and that's
God.
A big thing that living in New York did after being here a couple of years was learning that there's people you can be friends with and you can hang out with them and go to parties with them and you know, that you don't necessarily need to be around all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And just because you're friends with somebody doesn't mean you need to get sucked into whatever their mental health, or maybe not mental health is the right word, but whatever their mindset is.
Sure.
Because I think it's very easy to do that, especially when you're with at mics. You become friends with a bunch of people. You go to mics together all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden you're like, you start seeing people and you're like, oh, that's a weird thing you're doing. Or that's a weird thing. Or that's being it. And then all of a sudden it becomes a big negative fest. And that is, to me, is I think the biggest sickness to any art is being surrounded by negative. It is great to sit around with people and talk shit. I love it. Comedy festivals are the best because you can just go places and talk shit with like-minded comics from all around the country and be like, oh my God, I fucking hate this too. But if that's all you're doing, then that's horrific, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's, to me, is not what I'm looking for. Yep. Now, there are comics who are, their whole thing is they're angry, and that's their thing, and they can be hilarious. But that's not what I'm chasing or looking for.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a big proponent of surround yourself with positivity.
Mm-hmm.
You have to. I spent the first 28 years of my life taking everything too seriously.
Yeah.
And it was good. I learned a lot, but I didn't need to take anything. Yeah. I took Ultimate Frisbee seriously.
Sure.
Like, come on.
Well, you gotta hit that goddamn net, you know?
Oh, my God. Well, that's disc golf.
Well, that's all all right. That's what I hear when you say Ultimate Frisbee. I feel like I took nothing seriously.
Okay.
And then I started doing stand-up, and I took it way too seriously.
Sure.
For a little bit. And that's... like, we did a roast once. This kind of... proves my point. I took it too seriously, but then also proves my point of being like, yeah, this is what I should have done. But we did a roast once, and I was like a year or so in, 2 years in. And a roast joke for me was by one of the comics in Des Moines was, if you want to talk about comedy, talk to Patrick because that's all he wants to talk about. And I was like, yeah, I'm a fucking comedian. That's what I want to be. it's like that to me. I loved, and that just showed my mindset and this drive and career that I chose. And that person's mindset and this drive and career that they chose. And we're both right and we're both wrong, you know?
Yeah.
for ourselves.
Yep.
But I just thought that was like, that's how serious I was. That's what I wanted to do. Yeah. And a lot of that was the trying to make up time thing. Is like,
sure.
I had a friend once who was, and this was great because in New York, you started here. You don't even know it, but you're so spoiled because you get up so much.
Yeah.
And when I was in Des Moines, if you did every open mic in Des Moines, you could get up 12 times a month. And then maybe there was one or two shows, or you could go out on the road on the weekends and try to find something.
Yep.
But if you did that, it was all you were hustling to do it.
Yeah.
And I'm not a huge guy that says hustling, but that's how you had to do it. but you could do it 12 times. And I was having a conversation with a friend of mine once who's a comic, and he was skipping mics. And I was like, dude, you can't, like, what? And I would never say this to I would only say this to a very good friend, because I'm not going to push my goals on you. But I was like, dude, you can't fucking skip mics. And his argument was 100% something he heard Pete Holmes say about, well, if I want to go have yogurt with my girlfriend, or if I want to go walk to the park with my girlfriend, and then I see something and I'm living and I make a joke out of it, I can then use that. And I was like, we got 12 fucking mics a month. You could go get yogurt before, you could get yogurt after, you could walk to the park the other 3 days a week when we don't have. It was just one of those things that was like such an argument for a situation he wasn't in.
Exactly. And I just, it's all context. It. And it's just, yeah, like, yeah, if you're doing like 15 mics a week and one you miss to go do that and you, yeah, get a joke, it, yeah, that's great.
It
perfect.
It made me laugh so goddamn hard. And I think about that all the time too, especially here when you're like, when you can get up. I mean, fuck. When I have, like, sometimes I'll get up that many times a week on bad weeks, you know, like you just accidentally get up 12 times a week. And it's like,
yeah,
oh, this is amazing. Which is also why
I need to do something.
You get
more mics.
So much funnier. Well,
that's the thing that sucks. Also, I have a, like, my 9 to 5 or 8 to 5. Mm-hmm. Like, I have to sleep. What? It's such a bummer.
I would say, I think a huge thing. I don't know if you're this way.
Sure.
This podcast, I don't know what it became. I'm on coffee, and I've been thinking about comedy all fucking day.
We were able to entwine my favorite thing, comedy, with my existential crisis. Which this is the front for my existential crisis, and you hit a home run. Everything else is just gravy at this point.
Are you a goal-oriented person? You write goals, you hold yourself accountable and shit?
I try to, yes.
I think that is a very important thing.
Yeah, I do.
It's not something since probably 2013, I've been doing yearly goals on certain things. Like, I'll be like, I want to do this many mics a year. I'd like to do this many shows a year. 2014 is when I started actively writing them out and, like, putting them up on my wall.
Okay.
And then last year was the first time I shared them with a bunch of my friends, like close friends in comedy that I trust, you know? Because I think it holds yourself accountable.
Which I think is very important.
Also, a huge thing with physically, like, you got this palatial bedroom right here. If you were to write down on it, get a piece of paper bigger than a normal printer paper.
Sure.
Get a marker, write down 5-6 things that you want to do in 2017, put it up on the wall. That is going to help you do those 5 or 6 things way more than if you just keep them in the back of your head. I 100% believe that. So this is maybe too, corny or philosophical or something like that. But, like, I think a lot of people have the same dream. But sometime in stand-up, I would like to do Conan. I grew up watching Conan.
God, yeah.
I've gone to see him tape shows. He's my favorite.
Yep,
and doing
too.
Stand-up on there, I feel like that is, to me, would be important. I'm not going to turn down Seth Meyers. But you know what? That's, to me, what I think would be great. And in my head, I'm like, yeah, that'd be cool. But then one day I wrote a long-term goals list. Now, this is something I want to do. This is still, I mean, if I never do it, it definitely isn't going to happen for like 5-6 years. I guarantee that. But once I wrote down on a piece of paper, I want to do Conan and put it up on the wall, then that's way more of a real thing. It's like, oh,
yeah,
that's what I want to do.
Yep.
And so then I found myself watching more Conan sets. I found myself thinking about it more. I found myself being like, what would I do? Like, that's the thing I think about. Like, you know, maybe this happens to you. You go to a show that you're not booked on, and you just have that thing. It's like, well, what if happens if somebody drops out and they ask me to go up? What's that? What I do? You start thinking like that. I'm like, what if tomorrow, for whatever reason, they ask me to do it? You know, what would I do? And I think having those thoughts in your head can be helpful to you. It can also be, I feel like my narcissism is in check. If your narcissism in check, it can also be like, oh, I wrote that I wanted to do Conan 3 years ago, and I still haven't done it. That's fucking crazy. But I think... and I don't like communicating, this is very weird, but I think once you start actively trying to do that, it can help you. It can also hurt you. And that's the thing, that there's this, I don't know what this is called, but there's this thing about how, like, if you tell all your friends you're writing a book, it releases the same endorphins in your head as actually writing a book.
Yep.
You know? And so that's another thing it can do. If you're like, oh yeah, I want to do Conan. That makes you feel good. But yeah, you got to hold yourself accountable. Exactly. And you got to work your ass off.
That is very true.
And so that's the thing, like, to me, like, I know that when I said I wanted to try to do 300 open mics in a year, when I was just trying to do that, I didn't get close. When I wrote it on a fucking board, I got super goddamn fixated. And I might have, like, I think December 2014, I did, like, something like 37 open mics or 40 open mics in a month.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I wanted to hit that mark, you know?
Sure.
So it's like, you, once you're holding yourself like that, and it also, like, you have a really good thing where you started with you've got a support system of comics that you're really close to. Yep. And we're buddies, and like, we have all these friends and stuff, but there's a couple people I'm sure that you really trust.
Yeah.
And utilize that and find that group and share your stuff with people, and hold each other accountable without being an asshole. You don't want to be the person that's like, fuck you wanted to do this, but you got to be like, hey, if you need help with this, I'm here to help you. Yep. And I think that's super important. And yeah, I got very lucky I feel very lucky where I started that support system when I was 3 months into comedy, or maybe not that, like a month into comedy. Brandon Ream is a dude who I started comedy with him. He started a month before me, or 2 months before me. Right away, we became buddies. We became close. We had a great friendship. I moved to New York. He moves to Madison. 2 years later, he moves to New York. And so now I've got that support system with me here.
Yeah.
And it's like, and Gideon Hambright is exactly the same way. 3 years, you know, he moves here a year after I do, 6 months after I do. We have that support system because, like, sometimes, especially in your first year or two here, you go bomb so hard. And you're like, and this is the thing that would happen where I would get off stage and I would bomb. And it's a show or it's a mic or something. And I'm like, no one in this room knows for a fact that I'm funny.
Yeah.
But then I would see Gideon and I'd be like, Gideon knows I'm funny.
Yep.
Gideon has seen me crush.
Okay.
Same thing. If he bombs, maybe that same situation, well, I fucking know that he can crush.
Yep.
And being surrounded by people like that helps you so much. And then you see that happen on bigger scales too. Like, I love this story of Kumail Nanjiani and Pete Holmes.
Yep.
They did their Comedy Central Hours, shot them back to back.
Sure.
They started at mics together in Chicago, fucking whatever, 15 years ago. That's such a, and I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, because odds are none of us are going to make it. Literally, the odds are none of us are going to make it.
Yeah.
But the idea that happened for those two, that they got to start at mics together and have the conversations like we're having about, like, wouldn't it be great if this happened? And then 15 years later, they got to shoot their 1 hour Comedy Central hours back to back. That's fuck. It happened once. And if it happens once, that shit can happen again.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of an important thing. You know?
Yeah, it really is. This has been the best.
I feel. I can tell you, this ain't one I'm going to listen to. I'll tell you that. I get so in my head about shit I talk about.
Hey, listen, I understand. I get in my own head as well. But honestly, like, it's funny because when I first met you, the first time I really met you, we did the brunch,
mm-hmm,
mic,
yeah,
and you ended up being on stage with me, which I thought was the coolest thing ever, because I always thought you were a hilarious comedian.
That was so fucking Late Late Breakfast, right?
Yep.
Yeah. That's so fucking fun.
So much fun.
I just saw that they did that at Orlando Indie Fest, like the Chicago version.
Yeah.
Oof, that's such a good goddamn show.
So good.
Yeah.
It's so much fun. But it's funny because even through other people, you've helped me a lot with organization and comedy stuff. Like, I was talking with Albert, and Albert was giving me, like, pointers and stuff. He's like, oh, this is all stuff Patrick taught me.
Yeah. Which is funny because Albert, I love him, and he's one of my closest friends. But I went on the road with him and Nick Pupo for a month, and it was great because we don't know each other that well. We didn't even when we planned the tour. We've only known each other, even at this point, we've known each other a little over a year.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's crazy.
Okay.
But we gel really well, and we're really close, and we still are.
Yeah.
But I have never... I wouldn't say it's a disagreement. It's not disagreeing, but Albert and I see things so differently that it's very interesting because we can... I learned so much from the way he sees things and the way he does stand-up, which is interesting. But then, like, if I have a bit that I need to work on, I can't help Albert with his jokes too much because I'm like, you have a different brain than I do. Whereas, like, Nick and I, we kind of both tell stories and stuff, so we can talk out bits, and I'm like, oh, I can see, yeah, we can kind of be on this wavelength. But Albert is on a wavelength so much different than I am in such a wonderful way that I'm like,
so wonderful.
It's so fun to learn
from
that. Oh,
my God. Yep.
And he's taught me a million things too. It's a very interesting, and that's what happens when you, that's a huge thing that I would say to you or to any comic that's listening to this. Also, I want to point out that I don't fucking, my opinion is bullshit. I don't know anything and I'm scared of everything. and that I do not think I am anybody, and I know that I'm not, you know, I'm not Pappy trying to give out advice. I'm just being like, this is stuff I like and I'm on coffee.
Yeah. And you are though, like someone who, if I have a question, like you're someone I look up to.
Well, if you can listen to this and take something from it. Yeah. That's the thing. Like, I love this, a quote. You don't have to take everybody's advice, but listen to anybody that gives it to you. I love that. I don't know who fucking said it. Maybe it was
sure.
But I love that because, yeah, it might not apply, but if some nugget of this applies, that's great. And the thing that I was, I don't know, I lost it. Something I had at some fucking point, probably dumb. But yeah. If you're somewhere and if you're a comic, and I understand that the anxiety of being around new comics always sucks when you move here and stuff like that, but I ran my mic for a year. Or 18 months, I ran a mic at the Creek in the Cave at 11 o'clock. It was a popular mic. It was super fun. I learned how to do so much. I built myself so much there as a comedian. I learned so much from running that mic.
Sure.
And I saw a billion comics, and I made friends with a billion comics. But if you see a comic that you touch, like the first time I saw Albert, I was like, that's a dude I want to be friends with. And if that happens, you don't be weird about it, but like, just go up to him and be like, I think I like you. Like, you're funny, and support people like that, because that's sometimes people need that. And sometimes you don't, like, if there's nothing wrong with letting people know that you think they're good and that you think they're funny, and try to chase that. I wouldn't say, like, if you see fucking a comic that's been on Letterman, don't go up to him and be like, hey, let's be buddies. You know, that's fucking stupid. But like, if you see somebody and you're like, I like what that person's doing, I'm going to try to be around that. I want to be around that. And that's a good thing. And that's how Albert, Nick, and I became buddies.
Yeah.
And a bunch of people from my mic like that. Matt Tannenbaum is this fucking comic who I watched him start. He started around the same time I started my mic. And I watched him grow into this fucking rad comic. And it's like, oh, that's amazing that you get to see that shit.
That's awesome. Well,
also,
Patrick,
I'm glad it's over.
You are a very funny person.
Thank you. Sorry.
And I like being around you.
I like being around you as well.
Yeah. This was a lot of fun. Thank you. Unfortunately, because of just life, there are other parts. Usually I have a bunch of questions asking that are fun. But we'll get you out of here. I'm going to have you back.
Yeah, I'll come back
6
anytime.
6 months, whatever. Because, I know it was a lot of stuff that maybe you didn't want to talk about. But for me personally, this was like a 101 class on just what I'm dealing with every day. It's great.
Not stuff I don't want to talk about. It's just stuff that I know for a fact that if I was to listen to this in 1 year, I would fucking cringe my ass off. So.
And you, as you said, like you've talked comedy on several podcasts. But I genuinely think everything...
I like it. I enjoy it.
I love it.
And next time I come on, I'll have a different opinion on stuff and we can talk about different stuff.
Yeah, and we don't even need to. For me, this was great. And you could just tell you're so passionate about it. And that's what I want to do. I want to talk about people are passionate about.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes it's hard to find that thing. I've had a few episodes where it's like, oh man, we gotta go. Yeah. This is tough. But it was easy. This episode was one of the easiest ones because we were both just locked in, talking about comedy, a lot of fun. And I genuinely think a lot of the advice and just the things you learn, your experiences, can easily be applied to any art, life in general.
100%.
And I think
I've learned
it's wonderful.
So much from my wife being a landscape architect. Mm-hmm. She's everything. She's like, I say this all the time. If my wife left me, if we walked out your apartment right now and my wife was like, we're over, and walked to the left and I walked to the right, she could be fucking dudes and have a nice apartment and I would be dead before I hit the next block. Like, that's 100% the truth. And I've learned so much from her creativity and her career and watching her grow, because she's an artist as well. Being a landscape architect, it doesn't sound like it, but it is. It's a huge art. And so picking stuff from that is so important. And so, I don't know. I think look into everything and, I don't know, follow stuff, follow your heart. Oh, fucking goddamn it. I gotta pee. I'm done.
Okay, we'll tell you.
No, we're great. I just feel like I'm re-saying all the same bullshit I say all the goddamn time. Be cool, live forever, all that stuff.
I mean, listen, I couldn't be happier. This is one
Thank you. This was very fun. This was a lot of fun.
This is actually literally gonna go up in like a few hours because I'm behind. Where can we find you? What are things you're doing? You're hosting the shit out of some of my favorite shows.
PatrickHasty.com is where you can find everything you need to know. Twitter at Patrick Hasty at PatrickHasty. I run a weekly show at a place called Rar Bar in Queens with my friend Sam Evans. It's a weekly every Tuesday night at 9. My baby is Jackknife Comedy, a rad show at the Creek in the Cave the first Saturday of every month.
So good.
It's fun. We just got moved to Saturdays and I'm so excited. If you're listening to this this week, it's this Saturday, the February 4th is our first
What time?
8 o'clock.
8 o'clock. Ooh, we got I think I could do that.
Ooh, we got a great lineup.
Nice.
Eric Bergstrom from Comedy Central, the half hour, is going to be on it.
Okay.
Carolyn Castiglia is going to be on it. She right now she's got a talk show.
That's awesome, man! Congratulations.
Who else? Somebody else. That sounds bad, but everybody on the lineup is good. Every lineup we do is good. We don't fuck around. But this month in particular, we have Iman El Husani, who I'm butchering that, but she's goddamn hilarious. That's Canadian awesome. Comic who just moved here.
Yeah. Oof. And like, I am always supporting, but like, this is a show that even if people I was friends with ran the show, if I didn't know anyone, I would go to this show. And I had. I'd gone to that show before I knew anyone.
Yeah. It's great. Gideon came from Iowa. We ran shows together in Iowa. We worked our ass off to build a show that we think we would want to go see. And luckily it's starting to get to a spot where we're like, okay, cool. Yeah. We are seeing the fruits of our labor. And we're 30, this is our 33rd show. And I fucking cannot wait for our 66th show.
Yeah.
So that we can be even closer to where we want to be, you know?
Yep. It really is so good. But that's awesome. Is there anything else?
No, I think that's good. Like I said, patrickhasty.com.
Cool.
Twitter, Patrick Hasty.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know my deal, @SetLaif. I'm on Instagram now. I don't use it, but
you can follow me on Instagram
Laif.
Too if you want.
Do you use it?
I love it. I love it.
Okay. I'm slowly getting there.
It's fun. You'll find it's fun because you can start making new kinds of jokes, like photo jokes and stuff like that you didn't think about.
And I think I'm better with it because I like really stupid, silly looking things.
Mm-hmm.
But that's great. All right, I'm going to get you out of here because you got to go do a killer show tonight.
Yeah.
Again, thank you so
much.
This was so much fun.
That was great.
All right, guys. See you next week. Bye.